Welcome back to another Mackham in the Middle podcast. Another Sunderland game, another away game, and another win to end the year of 2022. A 4-1 win away to Wigan Athletic, of course, a team with plenty of ex-Sunderland players. A win that took Sunderland up to fourth and put Wigan down right at the bottom of the table. And as always, we'll get into everything that happened during the game, the team news, who was there, who wasn't, and a little bit looking ahead to the next game, which is obviously Blackpool on New Year's Day, and a little bit towards the kind of second half of the season and what that could entail. But first and foremost, Michael, one of the things that has been mentioned a few times now that I did say to you right at the start of the season was that Wigan home and away is one of the games, well, at the start of the season was one of the only games where I would say Sunderland have to win, and it would be expected of Sunderland to win. With how well we've done so far this season, there's probably a few more games you can throw into that kind of bracket, but that was still one of the games that we had to win. We did win it, and we won it emphatically.
I think, obviously, the two promoted teams that came up with us, you'd throw into that category. Obviously, we have to still have to go to Rotherham, but Rotherham and Wigan were home and away, certainly games that you have to be doing well in if you're wanting to do anything this season. And yes, we won it very emphatically. It's weird because I was at both Wigan games at the DW in 2022. Obviously, we beat them 3-0 not long after Alex Neil came in. And then we, and funny enough, going in, and this is relevant, but going into that game, Wigan were high flying, we were low on confidence. And I was kind of doing the reverse psychology. There you go, Wigan, enjoy your 3 points. And to say that, a Wigan fan messaged me on social media, I think it was on Instagram, one of the few decent ones I've come across. And he said, congrats on your win, congrats on your 3 points. And I was like, nice try. I did that last season and look what happened. this was a game, weirdly, that I had, I don't know, well, I said on the last podcast that I felt my head was going with 1-1 because I felt there was going to be a game somewhere where we're going to drop points where we don't expect to. And I think Wigan going forward aren't the worst of, I think there's worse teams than Wigan going forward, although last night they were pretty poor. But that's not Sunderland's problem. We ended up getting the victory. And one of the things I'll touch upon is that it's weird that earlier in the season, people were talking about our lack of depth costing us. And yeah, yet last night, our substitutions for me won us the game. It's a big win. It's one that was definitely, again, wouldn't say needed, but it's one that, you know, you'd be very disappointed not to win. And for context, Wigan were about, was it like, they finished something like 8 points ahead of us, I think, in League One last season. And they were always well ahead of us. Whereas this season, well, I've just looked at the table in front of me, we're 13 points ahead of Wigan now, which shows you how mental this season is compared to last with the two clubs.
Yeah. And obviously that, like I said, John, that win takes us fourth. It puts Wigan bottom of the table. When this podcast goes out, we could probably be back down in something like 10th, I think it is. I think there's a few games on the night, and obviously that's their game in hand. And with how tight the table is, like we're going to say, like we've probably said about 10 times, we're going to say it for the rest of the season because I think it's going to continue to be that way. We are still in a very good position. We'll probably touch on this in a podcast that we'll do in the next week or so, where we kind of talk about the year as a whole and the first half of the season. But like I've said, I think we said it last week, the more we win, and the more we perform, you know, the more 30-yard screamers and Barcelona-esque goals that we start scoring, the more the question is raised as to, with a little bit more investment, can we finish in the top six? And like we said, after Blackburn, yes. After Wigan, it's an even bigger yes.
Yeah, you know, I think we have been saying it. It's about finding that consistency and putting those, you know, it was another time yesterday we've quite struggled for it, but it was, you know, it was back-to-back wins. Again, if we can go one better and, you know, get that third win against Blackpool, which, you know, in fairness, we should do by, you know, with how we're playing at the moment. There's no reason why, you know, you look at, to me, Blackburn were really poor. They're still, you know, ahead of us. You think, what is this league about? And if you could find that consistency from what we're saying is now to the end of the season, if you put those runs together, you'll be in with a massive, massive shout. And like we said, if we can add, obviously we know there'll be a few players going out on loan. You know, if we can add sort of what we'd call, I don't know, maybe 2 to 3, you know, in key positions and just add to that maybe a little bit of experience, you know, which probably won us the game yesterday, that there's no reason why we can't, you know, we can't stay there. Yesterday was a bit, I did put a tweet out saying it was a bit of like a basketball match with, you know, the young kids. You know, as soon as they get the ball, they're obviously they're keen. There's no fear. And they just want to go forward, forward, forward. And that gave Wigan a little bit of a, you know, that they can come back and maybe have a little go at us, even though they were dreadful. You know, you just want those experienced ones and the ones who did come on, who just took the sting out of it a little bit. And then when you do get your good chances, you spring them and you take your chance. And that's what we saw. But yeah, go back to the original point. There's no reason why that you can't, if you get the right things in place. You know, and obviously there's other stuff going on in the background, but you know, the recruitment, you've got to take your hat off. You know, I was worried about Michu last night playing against Power. You'd think he'd maybe school him a little bit, but you know, I thought Michu was solid. I thought he was excellent, you know, in the tackle and strength. Abdullah Bar, again, very, very good. You know, and Dan Neal was what, only 21, and you would have said he was probably, you know, 30 the way he played yesterday with, you know, the kids around him. So the recruitment's boding really well. Like we say, we need to build on that. I think if we really do want to push out of this league, which I think we can.
Yeah. And obviously we did go 1-0 up, Michael, and it was Ellis Sims that got the goal, and we'll probably talk about his performance a little bit later on, which I don't think too many people would disagree with on the large. Was probably far from his best, but he got the goal. And I don't know whether this counts as a goal from a corner. I'll let one of you two decide that, but it does come originally from a corner. Obviously, this is right after their keeper's made a double save. Abdullah Bar probably should have scored it. You know, he hits the rebound after Diallo has a shot saved. And I think, is it Jamie Jones? I think is the Wigan keeper.
Yes, it was. Yes,
it is Jamie Jones. Yes, he makes a good save. Bar should probably do better. But the corner comes in. Clark gets it short. He puts the ball in. Trey Hume with a pretty terrible shot, to be honest. Hits it in the ground. Sims at the back post. It's an easy goal. And I say it's an easy goal. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. And that's exactly what Sims has done all season.
Yeah, I mean, it was right place, right time, wasn't it? I definitely agree that Sims has played better than that, although I thought he was all right last night. I don't think there was anyone. There's one, the only player I could think of who had a pretty off game for me was Clark, but other than that, I don't think anyone else had a really worse than average game, and some players were very good, but Sims was just right place, right time. Question Wigan defensively, because, you know, if you're letting Ellis Sims get a basically an open goal, free header.
Well, there was a free player at the back post and a free player at the front post. So well, exactly. You do question so, who's marking who. But yeah, exactly. Not complaining.
So, I mean, to be fair, you could arguably credit Sunderland for the fact that our short corner and set piece routine, if you want to class it as a set piece goal, caught Wigan off guard completely, because they probably expected us to just hoof the ball into the box first time. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we did get lucky with the fact that Trey Hume's shot wasn't very good. And it was just basically a late Christmas present, wasn't it? Santa Claus was basically in disguise as Wigan players. So, you know, but you take it whatever way you can. And yeah, I think, and we talk about Ross Stewart, but I'll mention this about Sims. I think that Sims' seventh goal of the season. Yeah. I might be wrong on that one, but I think it's his seventh goal. And for all that, obviously, we know about, we've talked about Ross Stewart, so I won't go into it again. But if, say, Stewart was to leave, I still have enough confidence Ellis Sims is good enough to not necessarily do the same job as effectively as Stewart, but I think he's good enough to certainly keep getting goals, because I think he's got the natural instinct for making the intelligent decisions when in front of goal to try and score.
Yeah. And obviously, after that goal that we did score to take the lead, John, we had more chances. Ahmad with probably the most notable one. Sims did quite well in that build-up play towards that one. Diallo gets the ball, he cuts inside, he hits the bar. And, you know, Sunderland probably should have been 3-4 up before Wigan even had the first chance of the game. But Wigan's first chance of the game did arrive. I think it was Asgard, took a shot from about 20 yards, probably Michu and Bar a little bit slow to close it down. Patterson, for how well he's done this season, I think he is the one you'll probably look at and kind of point the finger on for that goal, because he parries it and he doesn't parry it anywhere in particular. It's straight out to Will Keane, who probably has the simplest finish he's had all season. And for how good Sunderland did, probably in that first half, that was a bit of a blow to go level at 1-1. And then obviously at halftime, that is what the score was.
Yeah, it was a massive frustration. You know, you've let a really, really poor team, and that's what we need to do is start putting teams to the sword and kill the game and then manage the game. I think in the actual goal, I think you can point to probably a catalogue of errors. First of all, I think it's Jack Clark, who I'm sure he has Abdullah Bar out on the left with in so much space, and he tries to play it in inside to Sims, who's crowded out and doesn't hold the ball up very well. That's the turnover then. And then they obviously spring us really quickly. Again, we don't shut the ball down very quick and we let them get a shot away. I think Patterson will be disappointed with it, barring it does bounce just in front of him. Not that that's an excuse, because you know he could still parry it into a different area. So he'll know by his own, you know, very good standards this season that it will, you know, that is a mistake. And I think our defenders maybe have to react. You know, Keane's a very good finisher, but he does react first. I think the defenders are, you know, maybe if you're anticipating Patterson saving it, which you probably are, you've then got to follow it in with, you know, follow the striker in and be there to stop him getting it. So yeah, it was a massive frustration. And it, if anything, it was probably Mowbray probably turned it into a positive and said, look, they've had one shot, you know, barring obviously McLean hitting the crossbar at the post, they've had one real opportunity and scored, you know, we've controlled the game. We need to go out there and we need to turn the screw. And obviously it took about 10 minutes for the subs, you know, and he probably used that as the momentum of, right, let's go back out there, play your football, and you will take these apart. You know, we've got to stop letting teams have an easy route in. If someone bangs one in the top corner from, you know, 30 yards, you've got to take half and go, fair enough. You know, but stop giving away, you know, stupid little goals. Obviously, the goal on against Blackburn was a frustrating one. You know, just cut those out and, you know, we can score goals against anybody. I think for me, the massive frustration in that goal was the decision making from Jack Clark, which frustrated me all game. And he had a simple ball and out wide, didn't do it. And then obviously errors have happened since then. But I think we did create our own problem there.
Yeah, obviously, like I said there, Michael, it was 1-1 half time. We come out second half and probably the performance was poor up until the changes. And I said on Twitter that.
This is the tweet you've got a bit of stick for, wasn't it?
Yeah. Start of the second half was poor. Changes need to be made, unless this is only going one way. Changes get made, and two of the subs go on to score the goals, which we'll obviously get onto. We win the game 4-1, and the performance completely changes from what was at the start of the second half. And you have people replying to that saying that's aged well. And it did. It aged very well, because that's exactly what happened.
Well, that's what you would have wanted, isn't it? I mean, let's not pretend. You still weren't trying reverse psychology there, weren't you? So, you know, that's what you want. You want to see the changes getting made, and that was what won us the game. And I think for me that if you look at I've said it on my video that I think if the opening 30 minutes and closing 30 minutes was Sunderland's by a country mile, whereas I think Wigan was starting to get more in the ascendancy in the last 10 minutes of the first half, and the first 15 minutes of the second, it was poor. We weren't at our fluid best. Some of our passes were misplaced. Players like Jack Clark, like John mentioned earlier, you know, he was trying to do his let's go in our own third and take on half the team, and he ended up losing the ball more times than he was successful at it.
Yeah.
So the changes did need to be made. And I was saying it in the ground that we've got to make the changes, because otherwise we will get punished for this. Or at the very least, we certainly ain't winning the game. And like I mentioned earlier at the start of the podcast, that if you compare the lack of options that people felt we had at the start of the season, which were fair criticisms, the options we had last night in comparison to Wigan's was what won us the game. And that, as you said, was the turning point in the match.
Yeah. But on the second goal, obviously, Ross Stewart comes on the pitch, John. Patrick Roberts comes on and, well, believe it or not, Alex Pritchard came on as well. Patrick Roberts gets the ball. He does what, you know, he always does, whether he's having a good game or a bad game. He gets the ball, he drives forward, he beats his man. He goes down in the box after he's played the ball to Stewart. And when he'd given the penalty, I didn't really realise what it was for. But obviously, you see the replay. I think it's Naylor comes across Patrick Roberts after he's passed it. It's a late challenge. Anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul. And quite frankly, it's a foul that I would probably expect referees in this division to completely miss and ignore just because the ball's been played into Stewart. They'll probably just see that as a coming together. So for how many decisions have went against us this season, you've got to give the referee some credit in that case and say, fair play.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we bash referees most week, and rightly so, but when they do get top decisions right, then, you know, ideally they've got to be praised. I don't think the ref was was that bad at all last night. I thought he was pretty spot. I didn't really notice him, which is always a good thing. And I think when Roberts does play the ball, I think the natural reaction, I think we did as well, is to watch, you know, where the ball's gone and see Stewart.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw the referee blow the whistle and then point to the spot, and I was thinking, wow, penalty, and not knowing obviously what it's for. But then when you do look back, you know, it's excellent refereeing, because, you know, Roberts lays it off. The guy doesn't even know where the ball is and just takes Roberts clean out. And that's one of them ones that happens, you know, all the time, week in, week out. So for a referee to spot that and give it, I think that is very, very good refereeing for me. And, you know, like you say, we're happy to bash them when they're shit, and they are shit sometimes. And we're, you know, you've got to praise them when, you know, when they get it right. And it was probably another really good moment. Obviously, you know, when Stewart scored at the weekend, it was good to get back on level terms quickly. And I think even though the keeper got hand to it, I don't think Ross Stewart's going to miss, to be fair. And it was probably gave him a bit of a boost and us a boost for, you know, we're ahead. We can manage the game now with the players on the pitch, and, you know, we can maybe go on and play a bit of football and let them, you know, invite them on, because they are a poor team, and then pick them off. So, yeah, back to original point. Excellent, excellent refereeing, to be fair.
Yeah. And obviously it was a good penalty from Ross Stewart. It's now 3 goals in 3 games since he returned, Michael, obviously 2 from the spot. 2 of the 3 penalties that we've had this season as well have come in the last 2 games, which is something, I suppose. But it's not the easiest thing in the world, especially when you're coming back from an injury, when you're coming off the bench and you've been on the pitch for 3 minutes when the game's already been played for 60, to go ahead, take the penalty, and not just take it, but score it with ease, really. You know, when Stewart steps up nowadays, there's not much doubt in your mind.
No, there definitely isn't. He's got the right level of composure and accuracy with the penalty. The first, at first glance, because obviously I was right in front of the goal, and at a very big, brief split second, I thought the keeper had saved it, because I think the keeper gets a hand to it and it goes in off the post. But to be fair, that probably you could also say that shows how accurate the penalty was if the keeper doesn't get a hand to it. And yet, penalties, we know they're psychological, aren't they? That if you, it's basically a mental, psychological battle with the penalty taker versus the keeper. And yeah, and sometimes we've seen before when, in the past with Sunderland, when we have a penalty and we miss it, the player who's missed the penalty, and as a team, we can deflate from that. So that's a big, that was a big moment. In fact, to be honest, the two penalties that Stewart's, every goal that Stewart scored has been a big moment, because this goal at Hull got us a point with 10 men. The goal against the penalty against Blackburn changes the game so quickly after Blackburn go in front. Bear in mind at that point they'd never lost when they get the first goal, and then last night when it was a big moment at 1-1, where if we missed that, then that Wigan's tails are up, aren't they? So you can't knock him. I mean, I've just seen the stat here. He's now got 8 goals in 10 games. You said it on the last podcast. He's got the best goals per game ratio of the Championship. But yeah, it is a big moment, and fair play to Ross Stewart. He's when he slots in like that, you know, it looks like he's never been away. And as we said, once he came on, you had a confidence that the game was going to swing in our favour. I mean, it was the case with every substitute, but especially Ross Stewart.
Yeah. And obviously a 3-1, which was obviously the next goal that arrived, John, it was Patrick Roberts that technically got the assist for the second. I don't think you'll get officially credited with it, because I don't think winning a penalty kind of gets you that assist. But for the third goal, he will be put down as the goal scorer, albeit a deflection. And I said it at the time, it's a bit of a shame that did take a deflection, that goal, because if that goes straight in off the post and in, or just in the bottom corner, that's another goal of the season. Because the build-up to that was just... The way we were playing the ball around in Wigan's half at the time for the goal, you'd think we were 7 or 8 nil up.
Yeah, again, we go back to it. We can play some fantastic football, you know, with the youngsters. And the one-touch football is just, you know, I don't think the Wigan players knew sort of where to look, where to run, what to do. And it was just, it looks so simple. You know, we don't need to play those, you know, Hollywood balls and those types of things. We can just play simple, you know. If Man City are scoring those goals, you're sort of going, you know, it's getting all the attention of wow, you know, and those types of things. You know, we scored the goal, obviously, at Reading. We did the same at Huddersfield. We scored, you know, some fantastic goals. We've got another one, obviously, to come on to in a second, you know, the fourth. But it's almost becoming like, yeah, it's the norm now. Sunderland play really, really good football. And I think coming into, you know, a January window and maybe a promoted team. I think it maybe bodes well, and those are sort of things that you can sell to you know, maybe slightly established players as opposed to just youngsters of, you know, look at the football we can play. Can you come in? Can you add to that? And, I think we said it about 10 days ago, you know, we need everybody. You know, Jack Clark probably obviously wasn't involved in that. You know, you look at Pritchard wasn't involved in that. Embleton wasn't involved in that. And those types of players who would be involved in those types of moves, you know, the options we have and the players coming off and playing that football is just fantastic. And, you know, how long have we waited? You know, I genuinely couldn't tell you the last time we played some really, really good football. Maybe going back to, you know, the Gus Poyet days when on our day, you know, we look at the one that wasn't scored at United, you know, where Catamol hits crossbars. That type of football has taken us, you know, almost a decade to get to. And we're finally there now and we're finally enjoying it. And, you know, we will murder these teams, you know, if we play that football. It's just getting that consistency and finding that balance of manage the game. And then when you can hit them, go and hit them. But yeah, what a goal.
Yeah, and for how good the third goal was, Michael, the fourth one is even better. And again, Pat McRoberts involved. He gets the assist for this one. Again, a player that we've talked about quite a lot that doesn't necessarily get as many chances as he probably deserves, because when he does play, whether he gets a goal or an assist, very much like Pritchard, he's crucial in, you know, the build-up to a goal. He wins the penalty for the second goal. He scores the third one and obviously gets the assist for the fourth. But obviously the assist is not the most impressive thing for that goal, because the strike from Ahmad is one of a player that is just far too good to be in this league.
Sublime. That, if you sum that goal up in one word, it is just absolutely sublime. Like we've said, I'm running out of the amount of times I say this with Ahmad Diallo. Like, it's a shame he's not here next season, really, unless we go up. But you know what? Ahmad Diallo, the recruitment team especially have played a blinder by getting him in, because I'm pretty sure we were not the only club we linked with Ahmad Diallo. I'm pretty sure there was probably about a good four or five clubs that were really after his services in the summer. And to show the patience to get him just says how good that decision to get him in was. And the goal was just... You love goals like that, don't you? The moment the ball leaves his foot, the accuracy, the spin on the shot, swerve on the shot, the speed of the shot... Wicket, I mean, was it I've forgotten the wicket keeper's name already, and I was there. Jamie Jones, was it Jamie Jones you said?
Jamie Jones.
He was just literally that was terrible for me. That, but Jamie Jones just he basically was obviously diving for it, but he was helpless. The shot was just so accurate and so well hit that I think most keepers find it difficult to stop that, and that just capped off what was at times a brilliant. Performance, a very ruthless performance, a very performance that was riddled with authority. That's the best way I can put it. But yeah, that and we set and the third goal in the build-up was very good. But that goal just tops the lot. It was just sublime.
Yeah. You know, so we'll get on to the three of the best in a second, John. But the thing with Ahmad as well is you'll probably look at his performance from the game against Wigan, and overall was probably one of the poorest ones that we've seen of him in a Sunderland shirt, especially recently. But if you're not having the best game and you can still pop up from 30 yards, sticking in top corner, you are a top player.
Well, yeah, that's why, you know, you're looking at why Man United paid sort of, you know, upwards of whatever, 40-odd million for him. You know, he can have, you know, I think everyone raves, obviously, it's maybe slightly different levels. You know, everyone raves about Kylian Mbappe in the World Cup final. You know, he didn't turn up for 80 minutes, to be fair. And then obviously after that, you know, he's absolutely sensational. That's what, you know, the top players will do. Obviously, with him still being young, you're going to find that inconsistency. I don't want to make excuses, but you're probably looking at the pitch as well was sort of a rugby pitch, isn't it? So it's very, you know, probably we did really well, to be fair, to play on that surface. Whereas we used to, you know, the stadium like that's, you know, like a carpet. But yeah, he's got that ability, and obviously Man United are very, very happy with him. I think, you know, the recruitment team would have to go to United and maybe justify, you know, what they can do with him. Because I think I read something that Tony Mowbray said, obviously, probably about sort of, you know, eight to 10 weeks ago saying that, you know, he needs to brush up on this, he's not good enough at that. And obviously they've sat down with him and gone through what they need to go through with him and said, look, this is where you need to be, this is what you need to do, this is, and now we're looking at, you know, I'm sure the stats even at the moment say he's probably the best player in the league at the moment. So again, Man United would be more than happy with that. Obviously it's a shame that it's another loan player we'll fall in love with. You do wonder why it hasn't happened for him at other teams, but it's just sometimes these things just fit. And yeah, his goal, you know, I think Padgett Roberts, I think he even knows what he's going to do and just says, right, here you go, there's the ball, one touch, yeah, and turns. And it's just, yes, yeah, it's just an absolutely fantastic finish. My stream literally went off and it came back on just as he was spinning the ball in. It was just, yeah, wow, what? You know, what a finish. Like Michael said, it was the same as the Birmingham goal. You know, he cut inside in the Birmingham. As soon as you knew it left his foot, you're like, that's going in. Wow, what a finish. And yeah, he's obviously a class above. And if we could keep him, you know, I think he got smashed by McLean, didn't he, with the ball. And you're thinking, oh my God, what happens if he gets injured? But yeah, he's another one. Let's enjoy him while he's here. And, you know, he can definitely be the difference. But yeah, Man United have got a top player on their hands.
Yeah, I think it might be a bit of a stretch to compare him and Mbappe at this point, because I don't think Mbappe's quite got the ability yet. But
yeah, exactly. That's the point I meant, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Three of the best, Michael, starting with you.
Oh, I was literally trying to think this in my head here. I've got like, okay, I think I've got the three. Right, third. I'd probably,
so far, because I think you can look at Trey Hume, you can look at Luke O'Neill, you can look at Dan Ballard,
yeah,
Dan Neal, Abdullah Bar, Robert Stewart, Diallo. You could probably do 14 of the best.
Now you've just named more players for me to think of.
Yeah.
Okay, right, I'll try and narrow it down. If I say them, I'd say third would be, it's between Abdullah Bar and Trey Hume. I'm trying to think who I think was better. I'll tell you what then, I've raved about Abdullah Bar before. I'll go Trey Hume. I think Trey Hume for me was, this is the problem you want to have though. You want to be able to say, oh, hang on, is it, right, screw it, I don't care. The three I'm going to mention are probably going to be within a fingertip of each other. It's that close. But I'd go Trey Hume. I think Trey Hume looked very assured, and we all know a certain Mr. James McLean, who's not very popular with Sunderland fans, and that tackle goes a long way into silencing him and shutting him up. But yeah, Trey Hume, very, very good, composed, authoritative performance. And I said that I think I'd want to see him go out on loan in January. But to be fair, if he plays like that, he'll have tougher games. But if he plays like that and just continues to get better, then he's got a case to start. They'd have make the shirt his own and start regularly.
Yeah, it's always been a weird one with Trey Hume, because I don't think pretty much every game I can remember him playing, he's been very good. But he just never seems to get a run of games in the team. And, you know, you look at Lyndon Gooch, who, you know, I think he had a good game when he played against Blackburn, and, you know, he started the season well, but he's inconsistent. Trey Hume's been good every time he's played.
Trey Hume, for me, has gone really under the radar, hasn't he? And I think that's the way to sort of sum him up. But I think he actually looks quite, and even in League One, I think when he had those few games when we were really, really bad, but Trey Hume wasn't one of them. I think Trey Hume looked all right even when he played in League One. And it's just a matter of that if you're not going to send him out on loan, then Trey Hume needs to be playing games. One way or another, he needs to be playing games, because we'll have signed him with the view of him being our first choice right back in a couple of seasons.
Yeah. Anyway, John.
Yeah, Michael's totally stolen my man, because I was going to go with Trey Hume and echo everything he said.
You can go second. You can go first for second if you want then.
But I'll switch it over to Barr. I thought Barr was really, really good. I thought his driving runs was superb. I thought he knew when to release the ball, and for such a young kid, and just very, very good on the ball and driving forward. Maybe unlucky not to score. You maybe expect him to get a shot on target. I thought his pressing was excellent, you know, in the first half when he smashed into the defender and, you know, ultimately made him go off. You know, the pressing was excellent. It's easy to, as a youngster, just think, no, I'll just sit in. And, you know, it was, and you'd probably say he's out of position as well. He's sort of playing like a high sort of left in behind Sims. You know, he wasn't really playing his midfield, but to me, absolutely flourished. Very unlucky to maybe not get a free kick right at the end when, you know, the defender's absolutely stamped on his foot. you know, yeah. And the referee sort of waved it on. But yeah, for me,
that was a sympathy decision from the referee. That was a sympathy decision, no doubt.
Yeah, it's one of them. But yeah, to me, I was very impressed. Like you said, I think we said about, you know, earlier, the worried about Michu playing. But, you know, you're always worried about, you know, obviously Barr played last time and it wasn't really up to scratch. And it you'd like to think, you know, maybe he's had that 4 or 5 weeks of now coaching. This is how you do. This is how you play. And, you know, when you do see him in the starting lineup, you're a bit, you know, and to be fair, didn't let anyone down and played, you know, played without any fear. And that's, I don't think you can ask for any more than that.
Yeah, I'll go back to you for your second one then, John.
Second one, I will go for...
So you've got the same issue I have. There's too many to pick from.
Yeah, there is. I'm trying to pick people who played, you know, sort of most of the game. I'll probably go with... It's probably an under-the-radar performance, but I'll probably go with Dan Ballard. I thought he was solid. Gave away a stupid free kick, but he's doing one of those one a game, you know, and again, he's still young, but, if, you know, I could probably pick any one of the back three. You know, to be fair, Luko 9 kept, you know, was it Lang on the wing? It was supposed to be quite good.
Yeah.
Literally kept him, tussled him out of it, played the dickhead, you know, when they need to, by pushing and pulling and, you know, just didn't look out of place in sort of a left-back role, you know, just... But, yeah, I'll probably go with Ballard. Just, yeah, very... It's a shame we've lost him, you know, for that long a time, because I think he would have shored it up a little bit. But, yeah, where Speakman's found him, you know, we'll never know. But, thankfully, he's ours and he's on a good deal. So, yeah, I'll go Dan Ballard.
Yeah, Michael.
I'll tell you what then, because again, Dan Ballard was another one I hadn't thought about. But again, he was very good at doing the simple things. But he's also got quality. And I'm not going to mention him because I'll try and be different. But I will say this about Ballard: it says a lot when Vincent Kompany apparently wanted him at Burnley. Vincent Kompany, who's one of the best defenders that the Premier League's ever seen, and I think that tells you how good that Dan Ballard is. But for me, I'll go Luko 9 for second. I think it's just, again, what can you say about this guy that hasn't already been said? He's adapted superbly to the Championship, much better than I and probably many other Sunderland fans thought he would. And he just doesn't look out of place now in this division. As a midfielder, you could maybe have got away with him in League One, but Championship, I think he might, I don't know whether he'd be up to scratch, but certainly as a centre-back or as a defender, he's on there on merit, and it would be very, very injustice of him to take him out there at the moment.
Yeah. Well, last but not least, Michael, your first of the best of three.
I was originally thinking Ross Stewart, but I'm going to try and use John's logic of playing players who played most of the game. So for me, I'll go with Dan Neil. Daniel ran the show for me. When we were really on top, which is basically two-thirds of the game, Dan Neil was a big influence in that. Michu, I thought, did pretty well. Barr did really well, as John said before. But for me, Dan Neil... That was a performance beyond his years, if that makes sense. He didn't look like, I think one of you guys said, it looked like he was more like a seasoned veteran the way he was playing. He was very good at just getting the ball back, recycling it, retaining possession, finding the right pass, getting things ticking over. It's just one of these simple things that he does in the midfield that a lot of people don't appreciate in some midfielders. And for me, I mean, it's funny, though, because that was one of the reasons I like Max Power in League One. But, you know, that's a different story. With Dan Neil, he's just got so much quality. And again, in time to come, it'll test the regime and the recruitment team how well we can keep hold of him. But yeah, Dan Neil for me was superb last night.
Yeah, I think he was probably one of the oldest players in our starting 11, which goes a long way to saying that. But lastly, yeah. John.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not going to change... I am going to change the logic and I'm going to go with Dan Neil as well. I thought from start to finish, he was fantastic. I think I only noticed two tiny mistakes when he tried to roll a player and there was two men on him. But apart from that, totally ran the show. And like we're saying, like Michael was saying, he played as if he was, you know, the 30-year-old in there. You know, he was winning tackles. He was up the pitch, down the pitch. And, you know, we've been looking for a 90-minute Dan Neil performance for, you know, maybe for a while now, and you know, when Corey Evans is out, are you worried, you know, because it's going to be Dan Neal and, you know, another youngster in there. And, you know, Dan Neal to me played as if he was the Corey Evans and the, you know, the 30-year-old. He finds himself in the box, you know, he's probably the holding midfielder or one of, and, you know, he's in the box for, you know, the third goal. So he's got that in his locker, and you saw him out at left back, at right back, just getting his foot in, winning tackles, doing exactly what Corey Evans does. And, you know, I am the number one fan in the Dan Neal fan club, and I'll never have a bad word said against him. So when he comes up with these performances, it's, you know, it's very, very pleasing to me.
It is. But obviously that is the last game, well, it was the last game of 2022, a year that started with us losing 6-0 to Bolton, with largely the exact same team that has played the majority of games this season, and obviously ended with us. I say ended with us, it hasn't actually ended yet, but as it stands, we are fourth in the table where we are.
I will quickly mention, while you've said that, I've looked at tonight's games, and I think the lowest we can finish, lowest we can be after tonight is sixth, because Norwich play Reading, both of them can't go above us, and Watford go to Swansea. So say Watford and right. Norwich or Reading go above us, so we are going to be in the playoffs, I think, by the end of tonight, whatever happens.
Yeah, so to start the season, away to Bolton with a 6-0 defeat, a Danny Bart diving head of own goal, and ending the year, in the playoffs. God, I hope we end the season in the playoffs, but ending the year in the playoffs is where we are for now. The first game of the new year is Blackpool away, John. And I think it might only be the second time we've played Blackpool on New Year, but it just seems like it happens every season. I don't know why, but it's going to be a game that Sunderland should be winning again. I don't think it's too far out there to say that. Blackpool are obviously second bottom, just a point above Wigan, who we absolutely battered yesterday. It's not going to be the easiest game. Obviously, Blackpool have a few good players. Jerry Yates, a player that has been linked with replacing Ross Stewart. Don't think there's going to be too much happening on that front. But, you know, with 6 points from the last two games, I said that 7 points out of these three games would be a good return from Sunderland, kind of expecting that 1 point would have come against Blackburn. We've beat them, we've beat Wigan. If you beat Blackpool, you start the year on a high, and like I say, the ceiling could just continue to raise as the season goes on. But what is the prediction for that game?
I'll probably go 2-0 Sunderland. Like I say, it's not going to be easy. I don't think they're ever easy, apart from when you play Wigan. I'll easily take a 2-0. I think maybe giving Stewart sort of 50-60 minute break yesterday, he could then, you know, start the game. But if we're really serious about staying in the playoffs and cementing our place in there, then you've got to go to these places and pick up results. And ultimately, we do owe them for, you know, the 0-0 at the Stadium Light, which we, you know, if we maybe had a striker, we probably would have won sort of 3-4-0, but we didn't. So I think we do owe them. And then, like I say, it's good to start the new year on a high. And then, you know, then it's a nice break for the FA Cup. We can, you know, we're not too fussed about the FA Cup. Nice runner, be good, but, you know, we can give a few of the squad players a go.
Yeah. And Michael, predictions for that game?
This is weird, because the Wigan game, I thought there was more likely for us to drop points. I think I agree with you guys that it's one where if your expectation has changed to being in the playoffs, then this is a game you need to be winning. Blackpool are on it. Well, I mean, I'm not convinced by Michael Appleton. I think Blackpool aren't exactly on a great run of form. Form, of course, can change, but I would say 3-1 us as well. I've just got a feeling Jerry Yates is going to score with all the links. But to be fair, I think now, when you look at it, if we can beat Blackpool, I mean, even a draw wouldn't be the end of the world now you've won these two games. But really, I'd be disappointed not to beat Blackpool. So if you win this game, you're on, 40 points? You've had a fantastic festive period. And to be honest, since December, if we beat Blackpool, that's incredible. So yeah, I'd say a nice Sunderland win wouldn't go amiss. But, and how many fans are travelling down?
Probably more than there is Blackpool fans.
Sorry?
Probably more Sunderland fans than there are Blackpool fans.
Well, there'll be a few Newcastle fans in the mix, won't there, to be honest?
Absolutely.
As is down, but are either of you two going down?
I'm not.
No, I wish.
No, I wish I was as well. Sadly, no, I'll go 3-1 Sunderland. I think if we can get a win, get through this game, then like John said, the main players will get a couple of weeks off, because I doubt many of them will play at Shrewsbury.
Yeah, as always though, we'll have a podcast out talking about that game I've lost track of what day it even is now and what day the game's on. So at some point after the game, there'll be a podcast out. I think it's Friday now, isn't it?
It's Friday now. The game's on Sunday.
Yeah, so probably have something out on Monday, I would like to think. God knows who we could have signed by then. Probably no one, no one Sunderland. And they're kind of, not reluctancy, but usual business, usually coming towards the end of the transfer window. But you never know with that one. Happy New Year to everyone. And hopefully next year is the one where we can see back-to-back promotions. But that is a long way away yet. And there's plenty of games, plenty of points to play for, and there's going to be plenty of twists and turns along the way. But until then, we will see you later. That's all, folks.